This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 11th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is Structure Function, Selective Variation of. This lecture is 63 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Thank you.
All right, let's go in for something here on this third hour of December 11th afternoon. Let's go in for something very much more specific, and I'm going to give you your straight rundown on this quite rapidly on this page 38. List of processing. All processes are based upon the original observation that an individual could have implanted in him by hypnosis and removed at will any obsession or aberration, compulsion, desire, inhibition, which you could think of by hypnosis. Hypnosis then was the wild variable. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't work. It worked on some people, it didn't work on other people. And any time you have a variable that is wild as this, study it. The essence of solving problems is the essence of solving one against the other, the highest certainty that you can reach versus the most variable thing you could reach. Well, I had a high certainty already. I had survival. Got that in 1938, a little before that. And I'd studied the endocrine system and structure at will. I just studied it, spent a year doing nothing but studying the endocrine system, trying to find out if anybody knew what happened to the endocrine system. The British solved the endocrine system better than the Americans had. And it was really some kind of an alarm or monitoring system of the body, but it did not respond to matter. It couldn't be monitored very much by matter, but boy, could it be monitored by mind. Ooh, you could take somebody and you could remove a compulsion or an inhibition and his endocrine balance would just go zing way up along the line. Or you could hypnotize him and selectively repress, if you please, almost any gland he had. And then knock that repression out and turn the repression on again. Handle it by direct command and hypnosis. That's function, you understand. And you could feed him hormones, and you could feed him anything else you could think of, and you couldn't materially change his behavior. So I had solved the basic problem of what did you study, structure or function? If it had been structure, I would have gone into structure on an engineering level and tried to knock the problem apart from that angle. It turned out that wasn't it. Structure was not the answer or the road to an answer, because you couldn't do anything with structure. You could use the most rigorous tests you could set up and observe as close as you wanted to, and nothing happened. Nobody had ever tried to do this before in the history of the examination of man. I want you to understand that that job had not been done. Nobody divided the problem into two halves, structure, function, and had then selectively taken each one of these halves and see if you could monitor structure and function by treating just one half of it. In other words, could you change structure and function by handling only structure? That was a question that should have been asked. And then could you handle structure and function by handling only function? Well, you have to break a problem down before it can become a problem. So maybe nobody even knew there was a problem here. But certainly there weren't any answers to it. I don't make any reservations on that. Louis Pasteur's work is a shining example of accuracy in a field which is otherwise just flop. Even Pasteur, he should have looked a little closer. He had all the tools to look with. What happens to an experimenter, an investigator? Something very interesting. He becomes so convinced that he has to be right that he doesn't bother to look. There's a good dissertation of this. Will Durant once wrote a beautiful dissertation on this. They find something, and then they've got to rush around like mad and wave this thing around and never look any further. They want to hit an action spot, accomplish it, and there they go. In other words, they're running on a very short cycle. As soon as they start something, you've got to stop it. You've got to run on a long cycle to tackle a long problem like this. So here you had all these people running around, operating and chopping and shooting people with things, and oh, God. On and on and on and on and on. Without ever having taken the problem apart. Well, all it required was we took the problem apart. Just compartment. All right, we find out, oh boy, were there some crews operating on this. There were a lot of people working on this. How do you change mental behavior and structural action by treating structure? They had people out of these Japanese prison camps and so forth, and they were shooting them, and they were giving them narcosynthesis, and doing all sorts of weird things in various directions, and it all boiled down to a structural address to the problem. Well, to an engineer, it's appalling for anybody to work on a problem, to even work on a problem, if he doesn't even have the design. Let's work on this thing before we answer the question, what's it for? You know, that sounds so idiotic to an engineer. We say, what's it for? They say, well, there isn't any reason for it. There's no goals. We're all in apathy anyhow, and it doesn't matter, and the problem's too complex. You ask somebody about this, how about working on the problem of the mind, trying to do something about the problem of the mind? Well, that's too complex. You say, but you're working on the problem of the mind. Well, yes, I know, but it's too complex. There's no real solution to it. In other words, you're in a complete defeatism on the problem. Well, how does anybody ever solve a problem if he knows it can't be solved as his first postulate? Nuts to you, brother. And I didn't realize that it was that bad for a long time. I just found out it was that bad, just increasingly. I started out first believing that there were a lot of people who were doing something on this. All right. I turned around, and I had hypnotism. I had a little advantage there because I was using hypnotism that I learned in India. And that doesn't bear too much resemblance to Western hypnotism. You've got variety of hypnotism there. There are 90,000 ways of putting a guy out. I swear there must be that many ways. I mean, you just run on and on and on. There's various things you do. You treat the perceptic lines in certain ways, and guys go kaboom. For instance, I had a very amusing one time. I talked to the staff at St. Elizabeth's. If you can place somebody in time and space, we can put it out now. If you can place somebody in time and space with great accuracy and then put a monotony on it, damnedest things happen. So I talked to these people from St. Elizabeth's, a spin bin down around Washington, talked to the staff. I was very careful to talk to the staff in a certain way and put them to sleep. Hypnosis bears considerable resemblance to sleep, and a person knows, any auditor knows when he's dealing with an hypnotic subject. The auditor should know something about hypnotism because it's a very standard set of something or other. There are various things that will happen. The breathing will become shallow, and the next thing that happens is their eyes will roll back up in their heads like that, or roll down like this, and their eyelids will go flicker, 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 flicker. And you do anything that makes people do that, and you've got them hypnotized, that's all. There's various methods used. You've just captured their perceptic line, and you're the only one in whom they're on agreement. You've just separated their agreement from the rest of the world, and you're the only one. See? Very simple. Then be careful never to remind them that there's any other part of the world with which to agree. Don't do as I do here. I talk about this field and that field and some other field and spots it around, and it requires you go all over the doggone space area. See? Well, that keeps people awake. And keeps them alert, and they keep learning. Otherwise, they just get to be a phonograph record. You can just turn them on, and they go yap, 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 and they run the whole lecture off verbatim, and they haven't got anything there at all. All right. Now, hypnotism, good. Then, selectively vary structure. Anybody for the last 120 years could have carried out this research project. This is not a special project, and it's not anything unroutine. This was carried out as a routine piece of research. Routine. What do you do to a problem to solve it? First, you ask the question. Before that, you have to assume there's probably a solution. No reason to work on problems. You don't think there's any solution. You just assume there's a solution, then you go ahead and solve them. Then you take the bodies of data that you have and cut them up in compartments and make sure that the compartments don't get confused on you. In this case, we cut up structure and function. I didn't say, what are we going to use this bridge for? And then neglect completely what we were going to build it out of. And we didn't, we chopped the problem in half, in other words, so that each half would be all structure down to function and structure. Function down to function and structure. One or the other probably did it. It certainly wasn't both. Although it could be, this third one, it's a team. Does it respond to teamwork? The hell it does. Guys sick and dying and brokenhearted and insane and unable to heal their bodies and everything else, so it isn't working as a team. All right, then therefore they're probably separate functions. So let's see if we can solve it that way. Hypnotism varied the hell out of the endocrine system. The endocrine system apparently was some kind of a meter. You could look at this meter called the endocrine system, and you could tell whether or not something was happening to somebody. So if you varied their mind, you varied their structure. Oh, boy, could you vary their structure. You could take hypnosis, and you could selectively shut off. By knowing what these glands influenced, you could shut off that function in the individual. You know, you can hypnotize somebody and tell him his nose is running, and his nose is running. You can just get torrents of mucus running out of his head. Just torrents. He'd just take handkerchief after handkerchief after handkerchief, and you just get him sopping. You can start a person perspiring on command, and he'll sweat and sweat and sweat. You can turn him hot. You can turn him cold. You can extend his hearing. You can contract his hearing. You can do anything with hypnotism. And boy, it's just no good at all as a therapy. And it's no good at all to find out what something's wrong with somebody. Because they're non-compos mentis when they're hypnotized. They're just an effect. But you set up this thing and you use this and you use it as a meter, a specialized form of use of the structure function mechanism of the human body. You become the mind, let them be the structure and the somatic mind or something of the sort. Now can we vary it? Boy, can we vary. We can make guys fat, we can make guys thin, we can do all sorts of things if you use good hypnotism. But we can't do it all the time. Why the hell can't we do it all the time? We find out in the field of structure we can never do it. That's advisedly stated. It's just never. I take the structural approach of electric shock. That's structural. They give people electric shock. Do you know they haven't got a record of electric shock ever doing anything for anybody? There isn't any record. But they do have a record that says that if they didn't give people electric shocks, they'd get out of institutions 6 weeks earlier. You know that these figures were never collected? You want to know about criminal acts against humanity. Go ahead and practice something without ever getting any statistics. That's interesting, isn't it? You know that I have the only survey that was ever impartially, and it was really impartially, done on the subject of electric shock. I hired a guy to do it. He was not interested in Dianetics. He was not interested in psychiatry. He was an investigation publication man. And all we did was get all the results there were on the subject of electric shock, wherever they were published by anyone, anywhere, and we collected them all together and drew them up on charts. Didn't cast any evaluation on them at all, just drew them on the charts, see what the statistics would say. And I've just given you the results. We couldn't find a case anywhere, just a case nowhere, where electric shock had ever improved anybody. We couldn't even find out where it had selectively quieted people down. We found out that there was a 3-day period in electric shock. You gave them a shock every 3 days, they stayed very tractable. You know, anybody can make a corpse, you can do it with a bullet, but you don't call bullets therapeutic. You see? So we had to define what's therapeutic, but you say you made the person better. Well, did it calm him down and make him happier? Anything? No. Definitely not. Gave him a terror of electricity, though. Fixed him up so he wouldn't use force in any category. Made him shed all responsibility for everything. Did interesting things. You can rehabilitate an electric shock. By the way, the way you repair electric shocks, I'm serious. The way you repair it, just rehabilitate the guy's ability to mock up force, that's all. Well, you don't even address the electric shocks. You feel a buzz in his head once in a while when you're doing this, and you just keep mocking up force. Standard routine mock-up processing. Electric shock is simply electricity. First thing you know, boom, there goes all the electric shocks in the bank. They don't go suddenly or anything, or they just cease to have any effect upon them. So they were really panty waste when it came to hurting people, too. They weren't even tough enough to hurt people. Prefrontal lobotomy, fix the guy up so he gets another body. Okay. Now, they're not dangerous. I talk about it merely because there's only one thing that really outrages me. I get outraged at this because I can't believe it. It just won't fit into my frame of reasoning. It's just one of those things that I've always been completely unable to see. Is why can't somebody solve that problem? These problems are all easy. They're just so easy. And it's something like there's somebody, he's in bad trouble, see? He's in bad trouble. He's starving to death. He hasn't got anything to eat, and he's getting skin and bone, and there he sits, and all that he's got in front of him is a whole ham and loaves of bread and so forth, and he's unable to solve the problem of how to get it into his mouth. You say, no, that's complete idiocy. So you go at that problem. Anybody wants to backtrack on that work will find some very interesting material on it. And that's covered rather fully in book one. It tells the various things you can do to somebody to stop this and start that. So it means what? That there's some kind of a mechanism by which, if you can get some guy to agree, why, then anything can happen. You can make him believe anything if he'll agree to it. Ha! Has to be in a special state. All of a sudden, you just take a look at the human race. We're trying to unhypnotize people. We're trying to wake people up. And it's simply that. We're trying to make them higher and higher alert. I dare say someday we may have a process which, by some magical formula or other, we simply say, all right, now here you are in a hypnotized state with regard to life and existence, and you're in a little bit better, more awake condition at this moment than you ordinarily are, but there's a much awaker condition than this, and the way you awaken somebody out of this condition is to count from 5 to 1 and snap your fingers. And if you count from 5 to 1 and snap your fingers, a person wakes all the way up. Now, when I count from 5 to 1 and snap my fingers, you will awake. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, wake up. The guy comes into full consciousness. There might be such a process. It would head in that direction. By the way, you once in a while do that to a preclear, and he gets very startled. And the lights just turned up. Something like this. All right. So that's the kind of modus operandi in which we worked, and out of this we discovered something which you can use today. There is a gimmick in the environment called a restimulator. You give a guy an hypnotic implant, and you tell him to play with his tie. You tell him any time you play with your tie, he'll do so-and-so. Then you wake him up. So you adjust your tie, and he does so-and-so. And pretty soon he says, I wonder what I'm doing this for. Well, I'd explain it this way, and he's got some wild explanation that has no bearing on your tie. For instance, you've said, every time I touch my tie, when he's hypnotized, every time I touch my tie, he will cough. Okay. So every time you touch your tie, he says, awfully drafty out, don't you think? And you say, and he says, fascinating. And he just keeps this up, and you finally wear the button out. Two things you learn. The button can be worn out, and you can have some kind of a gimmick like a tie, which will start a guy coughing. Ha. But what's he do? First he rationalizes very generally, then he narrows the rationalization, decides it's in the room. Then he narrows the room to you and starts to find a little bit of fault, maybe, with your clothes. And all of a sudden, he'll look at your tie, and he'll suddenly remember, and he'll go, boom! Oh, it's that tie. You told me when I was asleep, so-and-so, that I would cough every time you touched your tie. Oh, nuts! Now, that means, then, that behavior can be transmitted to somebody who was put under a heavy current and so on, a monotonous current inflow, and he could be put into this state. It doesn't matter much whether you shot him in the face with a gun and said you're dead, or you shot him in the face with a gun with a blank cartridge in it and said you're dead. Most of the time he'd die if you said you're dead. You get the level of operation then. It's just an inflow, boom. Doesn't matter whether it happens fast. If it happens very fast, you can implant it quick. If it happens slow, you implant it more slowly. It operates in any case. A man can be knocked out with drugs. He can be knocked out with a blow. He can be hypnotized by physical pain or by over-perception. Any of these things. So we add these all these things on, you say, for heaven's sakes, these people are going around and they're falling down and they're getting unconscious, and people saying, well, he's pretty bad off and he's awfully sick. Let's see if we can dig up any of these experiences when somebody's unconscious and find out if this is hypnotic state. And you say, look at these people are going around, and they do act as though they had re-stimulators in their environment. Somebody comes into a perfectly warm room and says, my, how cold it is, and has terribly aberrated behavior. You keep observing at all hands. I wonder if it has something to do with this pin mechanism, the re-stimulator, which is the tie in the hypnotic incident. Yeah. All right, let's knock them out colder than a mackerel with physical cause and physical reasons. We'll just avoid all the ritual and mumbo-jumbo of hypnotism, and we will say, whenever I touch my tie, you will cough. They come out of it groggily. And you know, they just don't quite... You touch your tie and just look a little uncomfortable. Nothing. Then you say, well, speaking of ties, and the fellow says, what? And you say, well, I'm just talking about clothing, ties, and that sort of thing. And you say, and he goes, there's another condition necessary then. Oh-ho. There's a thing has to happen called a key-in. When the unconsciousness is way deep, in order to get it in an action strata, there has to be a lock sitting on the very deep one. So you've got the engram, but it doesn't key in. It just sits there until somebody comes along and mentions it in such a way as to sort of trigger that into a higher level of consciousness, but it'll still lie there as an unconscious experience. Do they wear out like hypnotists? Oh, yes. Yep. You can wear this button out, just like you can wear out hypnosis. Well, let's just have him go over it again. The guy remembers it all. At first he remembers just the beginning and then the end, and then he remembers the rest of it, and then there's more of it, and then more of it, and what do you know? The button wears right on out. You finally mention ties, he doesn't cough. Touch your tie, he doesn't cough. And what's he do when he finally discovers what you've done to him in the hypnotic incident? He's all nuts. That's why I was coughing. And with that same incident, you can turn on streams of mucus out of somebody's nose. You can completely regulate their endocrine system in the most selective way. You can say, now look, this stuff, testosterone's bad, see? Your body can't absorb it. When you get a shot, it gives you no lift up sexually. Sexually, you're a dead fellow. Two ways to do it. One is kick him in the genitals. That's correct. Just as an injury of that selective line, all of a sudden interrupts the testosterone balance of his system and keeps it interrupted long after you think that injury should have been set up. Or you can simply slug him out and tell him so. Two methods, both of them highly effective. As long as we have the mind going unconscious when it happens. Otherwise, nothing happens, except some kind of little key-in or something. Well, if we run it through enough times, it wears out, the endocrine system turns on again. Function is monitoring structure. What do you know? We got engrams. Now we can operate on this guy. We can shoot this guy full of hormones. We can talk to him about this. We can talk to him about that. We can hypnotize him to heal it. Or we can feed him religion. And he doesn't get well. You can go out and you can say, now look, if you just believe in the great god Throgmagog, and so on, you can put this whole god over alongside of you, and he'll monitor you, and he'll tell you what to do after this. And it'll just work out fine for a couple of days, and then the guy'll spin, zing. He'll really spin, because he's made something else responsible, of course, as we know now. All right, the great god Throgmagog then could handle him for a couple of days and then handle him no more. Then he just goes downhill and downhill. So what? All of these duress or control therapies, structures, unconsciousnesses, hypnotism, medicine, in no case would alleviate a condition. They would hold it in suspension or hold it in abeyance in some fashion or another, but in the presence of a mental block on the subject, nothing could be done. If Mr. has gotten his back broken because he's got an engram about his back, it'd be the same thing as though you told this fellow under hypnosis he had to go out and get his back broken. Same thing. You told him forcefully enough and that he had to have an injured back and it was necessary to his survival to have an injured back and everybody feels so sorry for him and make it very desirable to have an injured back, he'd go out and break his back. And what do you know? You heal it up and you could strap it up and heal it up and fix it up any way you wanted to, and it wouldn't get well, and it wouldn't get well, and it wouldn't get well until you pulled the doggone incident. Now, you can do that, and the tests were on such things as a cut finger. You'd knock the guy out and cut his finger, and then tell him how valuable that finger cut was, and tell him he should get his finger cut. Just put a little pain in it. Don't hurt it any. But give him enough pain so that he's got pain on the unconsciousness. And out he goes and hurts his finger. And he'll hurt 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 his finger. And every time he hurts his finger, he gets another engram. He gets more sympathy, too. In other words, it's getting deeper and deeper and deeper and worse and worse and worse. All the way down the line. So, we've got the same mechanism at work. And they can be worn out. But they require key-ins, just like hypnotism does. You can run all of these various experiments, and you'll find them very productive. You find out you can run incidents like locks, and you can run locks wholesale. You can scan them. You can run all sorts of things all over the place. You won't have any trouble with them. On the assist, for God's sakes, don't forget the assist, because it's one of the best ways to handle something. An immediate injury. Boy, you can get that thing down, bang. But there's what's known as a creative processing assist. Give him new thumbs if he's hurt his thumb. Process parts of the body. Mock up parts of the body. Get superfluity on parts of the body. Lots of them. Break the back of the messed universe motto. It shall be scarce. Break the back on it. And the way you do that is just that. By giving the guy an abundance of mock-up. You see, the mock-up is more real in actuality, as some people here are finding out. You know, this messed universe isn't very real, but these mock-ups I'm getting are beautifully real. Now, of course, you get somebody, you back somebody up, you have to know where you're backing them to, and we find out all of a sudden you're backing him to a high level of self-determinism, and yet we find out to stop at a short point on self-determinism is quite undesirable. So you have to get him up to a high level of self-determinism where he is a good ethical being as well as a very strong one. And we find out he has to be a very strong being in order to be an ethical being. And so that sort of has to solve itself in that direction. And we've moved right straight out of structure entirely. Second, the guy can handle all force. He can handle structure. He can have it or not have it at will. He can step out of his head and mock up some structure, and he can do it well enough so that somebody will have to accept it. You can do a much better job than this universe, by the way. Now, you could continue to live in confluence with your friends. You could continue to live in the mess universe. You could continue to do all sorts of things. But with this knowledge and this information, you could bail yourself out. That's important. With the data which has been accumulated on this, you can bail yourself out. There isn't much that you can get into that you can't get yourself out of, even if you're all by yourself. These processes will work actually on yourself, all by yourself. So we've gone up the line to a collection of data, and this data is very brief, but really, it's there. It's just all roads lead to Rome on the thing. Self-determinism, and that's Q1. Look at the basic datum. What was man trying to do? He had to answer that. He's trying to survive. It sounds kind of silly. He's just trying to survive. That's right. That's all he's trying to do. There's no reason why he's trying to survive. It's just a game.
something to do. Then he got in too deep. Then he got to be a broken piece. And then nobody could help him out. And he couldn't help himself out. So somebody had to bail him out. I think he could have helped himself out myself. Now, the data accumulated showed us a heck of a lot of things. And all of these things were of the highest importance, maybe, one time or another, as processes. But fortunately, you don't have to know all these trick processes, but you do have to know the phenomena, because you'll encounter the phenomena, and there you have to know that direct address of phenomena is in agreement with the meshed universe that it exists. So you have to back up from that phenomena. So under processing, we get, of course, the auditor's code. How is it done? It's done from a high level. That could also be called the code of how to be civilized. It's done from a very high level of ethic, not from a moral. When you start to get victimized by the auditor's code, it has become a moral code to you, because it's no longer reasonable, because it's damaging one dynamic. But don't bust it as a straight break, because that is even more damaging. There is an ethical way of handling all of this, and the best way is to be so strong that you wouldn't have any inclination to. And you start to help somebody out, they just get helped out, poor fellow. And the fellow says, well, yap, 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 and you said, huh? Well, yap, 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 yap. You say, poor guy, you really mean it. Doesn't bother you. He runs all around the neighborhood and he says, you know, that auditor down there, he's just terrible, he just horrible things and so forth. Beautiful women go in there day and night. You know, he really, all the horrible things happen in that place. Terrible. Very immoral, all that sort of thing. If you're tough enough and you radiate far enough, do you know that the neighbors wouldn't even be disturbed? Doubtful, though, in this society. One has to assume there's something there, so on. The entities, they're ridges on which facsimiles are planted. And I was drawing you some pictures in a recent lecture about all these squares and compartments across the top. Each one of those things can be a thinking entity. It thinks it's alive. It can think as a being as long as energy is fed to it. Always remember that one. As long as energy is fed to it, it can think and act as a being. Therefore, if you, quote, pay attention to it, it will think and act. You start talking to an entity, and of course it talks back. With what energy? Yours. Now the auditor can actually start talking to an entity and energize it, just as people in a person's environment energize his entities very often. They come in and energize an entity. They get him dispersing or doing this and that. They actually are blowing energy at an entity. And it's apparently thinking, acting. That's the way they control him. That's a beautiful control mechanism. The entities will have the damnedest facsimiles on them, and they'll apparently be stuck on the time track someplace, each one different than every other one. That's because of the various ridges on which facsimiles are planted. And that's all an entity is. You can blow an entity to pieces anytime you want. Every once in a while, you'll get the strange and spooky notion that there's other thetans. And every once in a while, in a pre-clear, you'll get some very, very decadent thetan out of him. He'll take a look and he'll say, you know, that's a funny thing. If there's a glow that's very low order on a ridge, and I can't seem to handle that ridge, and I don't seem to be able to do anything with that ridge. You say, is there anything else on it? Yeah. Well, now detach that thing. Well, you got that thing detached there? Well, now detach the whole ridge, throw it away. There actually will be occasionally, but they're not active. Pre-clears will also have the idea that they're hanging around the backs of their necks. They've got old currents and old ridges will go into vibration. And they start thinking about the backs of their necks. And, of course, any ridge that's on the backs of their necks will go into vibration. They get the idea that entities or N-thetans, that's the wonderful one. N-thetans are creeping up on them and crawling up on them, and that they're being mobbed by this and that and so on. They can be very convinced about this, by the way. And that they're about to be attacked, or the whole town's about to be blown up, or any damn thing you could think of. And they'll get very worried about this. The truth of the matter is, no matter how dark it is, there's nothing can touch you. unless you sit down and carefully determine that something's going to. And if you carefully make up your mind that something is going to happen to you, you can undoubtedly fix it up so it will. Now, that's the sum and substance, then, of entities. As far as running engrams, I've just given you a dissertation on it. That's really all you had to know about running an engram. Plot the incident where it happened and make the guy go through it so many times he is so sick of it. It's very strange to people sometimes. They'd be quite amused at the first time they ever discovered this life engram. They went all the way through the operation. They were completely alert all the way through it. Or there are parts of the operation that they're not alert in. Don't be too surprised if there's chunks of engrams that ought to be there that aren't there. Don't be too surprised at this. You're dealing with energy and concept of energy, and the fellow had a concept that it was there once upon a time, but something might have caved that ridge in. There might be a heck of a scramble of energy in the vicinity of this thing. A piece of it might be missing. Now, sometimes during an operation, a whole ridge will blow. Don't think that a pre-clear suddenly, by the way, never make this mistake, that this is a sudden and strange manifestation that occurs, these ridges and flows and things like that. They're sudden manifestations that occur the moment the person became a pre-clear and never existed before that. Don't make that mistake. They put a patient on an operating table and they come down with that knife or that machine or something of the sort, and there's a bad shock. And this shock results in an electronic flash. That's some ridge blowing up. They don't have anything connected to him to demonstrate what's happening. But he comes out of that and he's a vastly changed being. They've blown his bank up and scrambled his incidents and ruined him. And he's got to be rehabilitated in the handling of energy. Very often an operation produces results solely because it merely shifts a person on a time track. Probably that's the only reason it does. I don't know. But I wouldn't say so far as that. You can still patch up a broken leg, although you're a hell of a thetan that can't fix up a broken leg, let me tell you. Well, throw that one away and get another one. That's right. It's a better looking leg anyway. I mean, that's about the way it goes. All right. The running of engrams then can become complicated by manifestations of energy and the fact that one tries to have the engram so he can run it. And, of course, the vector's in it. The second he tries to have it, the thing will very often go away from him, and he doesn't have it anymore. Or he tries not to have it, and, of course, it moves at that moment right in on him. There's one way of doing this is sort of emanate in the direction of the ridges. You emanate in the direction of the ridges, they'll start lighting up. Just blow in their direction. Don't emanate anything except a flow, not an agreement or disagreement or anything else. Just emanate in that direction and look. And what do you know? Engrams will come into view. You just postulate yourself a little higher up tone scale than you have to be. You don't agree or disagree or have to have or not have to have and so forth. Just emanate a little bit in that direction. Just feel yourself blow in that direction a bit, engrams that would otherwise. The guy says, I can't run that incident. You know he's sitting in mama's death, so forth. You can just get him to emanate kind of out in front of him or around back of him, wherever this engram's parked. It's parked geographically. It's just one that he didn't say, go into yesterday to. See, you have to actively say to an engram, go into the last 5 minutes, or it won't go. And then you have to hide from yourself the mechanism of doing that in order not to know you do it. Automaticity enters in on it, and you forget you're doing it. Actually, it's a completely conscious process. Every instant of time is a completely conscious process. So that if you're not just saying, time, right? don't have, park, and the time, you haven't got any time to. A guy sometimes gets into the state of not doing anything with it, see? And he wonders, where's my sonic? It's all stacked right in front of his face. It's all right. You can stretch it out, and he's got it all again. Only he's got to stretch it out. He's got to say, well, that's in last year. Now we'll string it from there. He'd have a track. But you have to do that, you see. And it's not spatial. You don't shift space. It's the same space as the thing occurred in. It's just disappearing in that space. And when he's mastered that trick, he's mastered time. It's simply time. Time past is not have. It's just not have, that's all. And time that isn't is just will have. And time that is habit. It's so simple. You can go on like this and explain like this, but it's something like trying to explain ad nauseum. The golf balls are white because they're white. It's all. They're just white. Now you run secondaries, grief charges, and you're in the subject of loss, and what do you know? Right back into time again. Loss is what? No time. You run a secondary the same way you run an engram. Start them at the beginning. They can be terror, be fear, be any of those things. You just tell the pre-clear to start him just like this. You say, all right, when was the first moment you received news of your father's death? The pre-clear says, well, I remember clearly that so-and-so. He's doing a big pretense. The engram is sitting right in front of his face, and he's saying it isn't there. See? Well, I call this, I know this, yeah, and somebody told me that's a lock on it. That, and you say, no, 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 no. When is the first moment you can pick up there that you heard your father died? Oh, I guess a telephone call. All right, answer the phone. Well, I can't remember that. Now, just a minute. Pick up that telephone. Where's the telephone normally sit? Take a look at it. All right, you got the telephone? Well, now answer it. Now, what is said to you over the phone? And the guy runs it off, and all of a sudden, what the hell? He says, I'm hearing this again. He runs it on through, and first he's very vague and upset, and it's very thin, and then he gets closer in to the thing, and then cries maybe, or gets terrified, or gets upset, and it all goes by the boards. Well, that's solved by having and not having. You could say, now get having and not having on the subject of Papa. Having to have a father, not having to have a father. You do the same trick by running it on a flow. So these processes are not disrelated. Now, running locks, you can just scan those wholesale. A lock requires a heavy incident to sit on. There's got to be pain and unconsciousness in the incident before locks start gathering on it. So when Joe Jinks comes in the room and he says, no, a black cat. You say, what's the matter with you? Oh, I hate black cats. Do you know every time I see a black cat, I get a black eye? I'm going to leave. I get terrible sinusitis too. Oh, you've got a pot of geranium. Oh, I can't stand geraniums. I'm so on and so. As he goes down the steps, he sees that somebody's left a roller skate on the steps. He can't abide anything like that. Why aren't people? Oh, a newel post on a bat. What is this guy trying to do? He hasn't found his restimulator. He's looking all over the environment, see, trying to find the guy with the hand on the tie. He knows there's a signal, and he's supposed to do something, and he lost the signal. And he just starts jumping at the whole environment. And you get what's known as associative restimulators. Because it's a hand on a tie he's looking for, any tie hanging up any place drives him into fits. And because ties hang on shirts, any shirt hanging up any place turns him into fits. And because shirts go on bodies, then any body hanging up any place turns him into fits. And because bodies hang any place, then any place turns him into fits. You get how this is working. All right, you can actually sit a guy down on an E-meter and look for the restimulator. What's the gimmick? What's making you jump? You could just search for it relentlessly. It's rather a long process, but you just search for it, and you'll find that the reason this guy's nervous and the reason that guy's eyes are bad, for instance, why is the guy's eyes bad? You could look in the real universe, laughingly called, and find out exactly what he's hoping he won't see. The first drop you get is you're afraid you'll see something, crash. Now, what is it he doesn't want to see? He doesn't want to see one of these restimulators, because if he sees this restimulator, then he has to do a St. Vitus dance or something. See, he knows that. All right, so we're right back onto the same basic formula that we were on before. The environment is upsetting. Well, he has certainly agreed with it to be upsetting, so you better gradiently break his agreement with the whole darn environment. Because if you don't, there isn't any halfway point. Get that environment beautifully unreal. Get him absent-mindedly walking through walls, tipping his hat to his hostess at night, walking through the front door and out, forgetting to open it. Going out and sitting down comfortably just outside of the curve and turning on the switch and driving home. not remembering that he didn't bring the car that night. Life could be beautiful. Of course, I don't guarantee what's going to happen to other people. You see, in view of the fact that this is all science fiction, it's so incredible that nobody will believe it anyway. And fellow says, oh, this big, tough guy at the party, he's always the life of the party, you know, he's big and he smokes cigars, you know, and he drinks heavily, and he was a boxer in his youth. He's strong. Knocks the girls crazy. He's all there for him. And he tears telephone books in half, you know, throws them negligently over his shoulder, tears packs of cards in half. Real tough, see? Real strong. It won't hurt this fellow's reality any after he's torn the telephone books in half to have them lie on the floor and then tear in quarters without anybody touching them. So it's a good thing we're operating completely behind a mask of any reality. You're going to bust somebody's reality to glory with this sort of thing. You can already bust their... If you just took one of these processes here, you still bust the reality. Everybody knows that after a certain age, such and so couldn't possibly happen and the body couldn't heal about this and that. My God, we've turned off cancer and diabetes and leukemia and so on. Actually, auditors have hauled them off of deathbeds now for 2.5 years and braced them up and put a couple of spikes through their hair to hold them up on the wall until a better process came along. But they are still alive. Actually, Dianetics and Scientology probably saved several thousand lives. I don't know. I would say so because I started keeping a case history on a long time ago, and it got too numerous, and I couldn't keep it. Guys just keep writing in, I wish I had it now, the just what letters I had on the subject and so forth were once in existence, and they're not now. But, they just kept coming in and coming in and coming in and coming in. It's a very funny thing. There are an awful lot of book auditors out in the field who did a tremendous amount of good, really used it down the line. Sometimes these auditors study a technique, they find it too fast, they can't charge a pre-clear enough for it. They'd rather have a slower technique than these new techniques. Boy, that's really... They're really in agreement with the missed universe when they figure that. There's got to be scarcity. They're creating a scarcity themselves. You see, if they suddenly took 10 people and took 10 days and cured all those 10 people, oh, no, the horrible reality shatter that would occur in their neighborhood would be such that there'd be Aunt Mamie and Uncle Joe up there, the relatives, saying, you know, I have a friend, and I wanted to know if you couldn't do something for this friend of mine. Because, of course, that friend wouldn't be me. Now, that's all very simple. It's business running concepts and feelings. You can get any kind of a concept and just get the guy to hold it for a little while. And it wears out. And then there's running ridges, running circuits out. There's blowing up circuits. Well, your thetan can run around the body and pull these things off, you know. And hook them up to light taps or digest the energy or squash them or light fire to one corner of the ridge and blow up the rest of the ridge. It's very fascinating. You can handle a ridge any way you want to. You just simply get out and take a look at it and do something with it. Ground it or turn it purple or change it around or fit it across the back instead of across the back of the head. And then finally you've changed it often enough, you said, to hell with it. We won't bother with this ridge anymore. All right, let's put another ridge on and mock up one and put it on. Then fasten that one in good and strong. You say, wait a minute. I'm fooling with my own body, and the ridge which I just mocked up is a perfectly good, solid ridge. We'd better come off of this. We'd better not do this anymore because that's getting just too real. Now one day you say, I wonder if I put a ridge between those two E-meter cans, if it'd short out the E-meter. And you sigh deeply. Because there are the E-meter cans lying several feet apart, and you've got a line between them, and the needle registers. You say, I thought I was handling just imaginary things. Here I was handling real juice. And running live flow, that's running present time flow. You just manufacture energy and blow things up with it, that's all. You just say, let's see now. There's a lot of ridges on me, or there's a lot of ridges on this pre-clear, or there's a lot of flows going on, or a lot of dispersals going on. Let's see, what do we do about this? Well, let's just throw a beam at them. Let's throw a beam at them and burn them up. Boy, you don't want to get too fancy at that the first time your power starts coming on. You'll blow the GE up, really. He'll just go start going kapow, pow, pow, pow. When the pre-clear is sitting there, if you wanted to be real ornery, just take a bead on his ridge, on a front ridge. It's bad to blow ridges. To hell with blowing ridges. Just put them in yesterday or something. Why worry about blowing them? You put a beam on this ridge he's got across his face. You could really raise hell with him. Just kind of tune it and say, wavelength is so-and-so. You don't have to say wavelengths anything. You say, I'll match the wavelength now. Okay, there's the ridge. Now, an energy flow will flow. Kerr-wah. The guy goes, boom. You'll say, my God, what happened? What happened? Did a light bulb blow up? I'm kind of blind. There was a flash. Hey, really, well, we're speaking in a term of reality now that you test with great ease. Those are the easier things. Now, as far as freeing a thetan by concept and feeling is concerned, and freeing the thetan in various other ways, present and future, by dichotomies and tone scale, all that, we've been covering all this. Get the concept that you need a body. Now, let's get the concept that you don't need a body. Let's get the concept that you do need a body. You're not running a flow, really. The guy says, but I do need one. Well, get the concept that you do. All right, now get the concept you don't. But I do need one. Well, I get the concept that you do, and you say, for Christ's sake, get the concept that you do. And the guy runs it 2 hours later. You still got that? Yeah, concept that I do. 2 hours and 15 minutes later. You know, I'm getting the idea that I don't need this body. Well, you don't just abandon it at that moment. You say, all right, get the concept you don't need the body. He'll run that for an hour. Now get the concept you do need the body. He's changed his mind again. Flow is reversed, you see. You're not paying attention to the flow. You just hold the feeling, and God knows what happens. Or hold the concept, rather. Now the feeling is quite different than the flow. Aesthetics are very good. You're right on solid ground. As far as by dichotomies, why, there's nothing easier than dichotomies to run. Positive and negative. Dichotomy means yes and no, positive and negative. Now, some of you are saying, how would you run agree and disagree on having? Well, get your agreement to have, get your disagreement in having. Positive and negative, and you'll get flows, and they'll flow around. Of course, that's slow freight. Actually, running flows and that sort of thing, running engrams, has a bug in it. It's a process, and why it was always a slow process. The pre-clear has to postulate that he's an effect of them before he has anything happen to him. He has to say, all right, now I know that it's there, and maybe this is just admitting it's there. But at the same time, he's waiting to be an effect of an energy flow. Never a cause of an energy flow. So you're processing somebody downscale. And when you're running mock-up processing, you're postulating your pre-clear as cause continually and never as an effect. He says, now look, he said, I keep getting these mock-ups, but he says, my God, do you know the back of my neck is about to burn? I could just see the flames coming off it. And you say, well, no, it's all right. All right, now get this anchor and put it back through the bottom of the boat. Now lift it up. All right. It's a lot of work. You know, my neck, you say, we're worried about an anchor. How about that? I don't think, really, that your mock-up has to be very similar to the ill a person is running. Because as he gets better and better, you can test whether he's getting better and better. Because at first, when you got mama, you had mama. Identification, see? Mock-up identified with reality. And then next, you could get something dressed up in woman's clothes and so forth, vaguely the same period, and that could be called mama. And then he's perfectly satisfied with that. Now the next time he gets something and he's got a broomstick, he can call that mama. And now the next thing he's got out in front of him there, he's got, his mother never had anything to do with church, and he's got a hymn book. He can call that mama. And then he's got a crumpled up sheet of paper. No significance, you understand. I mean, there's no symbolized association. Now, Freudian psychoanalysis halted people in the association band. It at least permitted them to associate instead of identify, and then stopped them in that band by insisting that it was an association and that their symbolizations associated with real life. And then, having gotten them into that band, took them down band again by making them agree. And if the IQ were ever taken on a patient undergoing psychoanalysis, daily tests, that sort of thing, if there'd ever been any thorough work done on this field. You think I'm just being sarcastic. Well, for any field to stand around and pretend we do thorough research, oh my God, they never did any. You look in the books, and all you find is opinions, 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 opinions. Where's the data? How many people were run to get this opinion? Well, we never ran anybody on that opinion. The aesthetics wouldn't let us. Let's go into the aesthetics before we go into any reason. Let's not get to the aesthetics afterwards. And by the way, what's wrong with most young writers is when they're trying to make this society agree with them and buy their stuff. They fail to get a reasonable bone structure with which to be aesthetic, and they insist on being aesthetic without a bone structure. Psychoanalysis did that. Freudian psychoanalysis insisted on being very aesthetic without any guts. And they didn't know what this was, and yet they tried to dress it up. This society and man at the state he was wouldn't stand for this. And that is not just failure psychoanalysis. I would not say it failed. Never got started. Anyway, the point we're having for supper tonight is simply this little slight datum. And that is that you want your preclear to be cause all the distance you can. So even though he starts to get into a period, first he's identifying. He has to see mama in the mock-up to have mama in the mock-up. Mama has to be live and breathing and everything for him. She's really satisfied that he's there. Of course, he's negative. He can't even get mama in the mock-up. It's below that. And then he gets a broomstick, and then he gets a prayer book, and then he has a crumpled piece of paper, and then he tells you he's got a whoop. And you say, what's a whoop? Well, he says, well, you can't see it. Well, yes, you can. See? And you look at this thing, and it's a nice piece of Picasso design work. That's mama. No significance. Don't ever, 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 exclamation point, underscore, in italics, in 18-point caps. Ask your preclear to evaluate what his mock-up means in terms of reality. If you do that, you have missed the whole point of 8008. You've just missed the whole cockeyed show. You say, isn't that interesting? Every time we talk about his boyhood, he gets this factory chimney. Ah, phallic symbolism. Every time we do. Well, you know something? If you were to suddenly point this out to him or have him find it out, you know he'd go down tone scale on a meter and in IQ. The work in this field has been carefully done, extremely carefully done. And I wish somebody had done that careful work before, because I had to do a lot of work that should have been done. That made me mad, by the way. I got awful mad about that, but I went on a tearing fury about 5 years ago. I found out all of a sudden there wasn't any statistical data in the field of psychoanalysis. And it's been in existence since 1894, and nobody's ever done statistics. And I kept asking people. I went around to psychological departments, and I went around to other people, and they said, well, no, it doesn't exist. And they said, well, we have experimental psychology. And he said, no, 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 no. I want to know what's happening in the field of psychoanalysis. I'm not interested in anything else. Now, where's the statistics? I'll be damned if I didn't have to sit down. And for 30 days, I would have been much rather out there pushing a car on the desert, or I would have been much happier down in a hot spot or someplace else. I have to sit down and run people on libido theories. You say, well, now, how is your guilt? By the way, I did this very well. I'm very educated. Yes, Mrs. Jones. Yes, life has been hard for you, hasn't it? Well, now, supposing you just go on talking. Just go on talking. That's right. Just go on talking some more. You all of a sudden said, oh, again? What was that again? You seem to be fixated on the Grand Canyon. You've mentioned the Grand Canyon 8 times. Now, what does the Grand Canyon mean to you? Oh? Just go ahead on this line. Now, let's find out. I didn't know what I was doing to this degree. I didn't know a lot of things. But I knew this, that I could get people who had had analysis, whose college within the last 3 or 4 years had been, their psychometry was fully in existence at the moment of their leaving college, who had then had an analysis. God! Getting the statistics together took about 30 days of precious time, and the statistics were damning. Oh, they were just grim. Terrible. It said 25% of them went spinny. Ha! Said some percentage I won't mention committed suicide because of it. And you know where the gimmick is? They made the patient agree with the real universe and it spun him in. And they showed him that every dream he had, every dream he ever could have, was really caused by the real universe. And that he wasn't free to have an illusion of his own, but that every illusion was motivated by the real universe. And that's a control operation that kills them. It slaughters them in their tracks. That's right. So don't ever let me catch you pulling the same operation. The course runs the opposite direction entirely. Get them to disagree with the messed universe. And not even by fighting it, just to hell with it. And you'll find out their differentiation above the association level, they differentiate more and more and more and more and more and more. Until there isn't any relationship between what they're marking up in the messed universe. Okay, let's call it an afternoon.